The countdown has begun. From May 14th to 16th, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum powered by Bloomberg. Join heads of state, influential ministers, and leading CEOs to make new connections, gain unique insights, and uncover valuable opportunities in one of the world's most rapidly rising regions. Request your invite for this exclusive event at QatarEconomicForum.com.
There is no doubt we face a profound economic challenge. We now need stability and unity. I pledge that I will serve you with integrity and humility.
The most important objective for our country right now is stability. Governments cannot eliminate volatility in markets.
You're listening to Bloomberg UK Politics, your daily guide to the corridors of power. I'm Ewan Potts.
And I'm Stephen Carroll. Today, yet another first Prime Minister's questions. We'll bring you the Rishi versus Keir face-off at the Dispatch Box and instant analysis from our opinion columnist Therese Raphael.
And as the government delays its big fiscal statement by 2.5 weeks, we'll ask what it means for markets and for the Bank of England.
So here we are again, another new Prime Minister. It's a familiar choreography now. Prime Minister resigns, leadership election, first Prime Minister's questions, speeches outside Downing Street. Rishi Sunak getting his chance to, he will be on the defensive in some cases. There's certainly a lot of things Labour has already been laying out some of their attack lines in advance of PMQs.
Yeah, I'm really quite excited for this one, actually. Yeah, Prime Minister's questions doesn't always deliver, does it? But when you've got two new leaders, or at least one new leader, so it's a new dynamic, and we'll get to see exactly how they face off against each other. It could be dull. I mean, they're both, you know, very sensible, serious politicians. They're both technocrats. Neither of them is Jeremy Corbyn. Neither of them is Boris Johnson. But I think it will be interesting to see the dynamic between these two. And presumably, these will be the two people leading their parties into the general election. Although I guess that's by no means guaranteed.
No, indeed. And look, some of the issues we might expect to be talked about, the lineup for the cabinet, particularly the return of Suella Braverman as Home Secretary, and what exactly that might mean. I wonder if Rishi Sunak's words that he's promising to lead a government of integrity, professionalism and accountability at every level, I think could perhaps be mentioned by Keir Starmer in some questions today.
Yeah, surely he's going to go big on Braverman. I see that the Labour, Yvette Cooper, has been granted an urgent question. She's going to ask the Home Secretary to make a statement on her resignation and reappointment as Home Secretary. Braverman calls the whole issue a technical infringement, but surely Starmer is going to go big on this. I reckon that's going to be his lead-in.
And the other, of course, news that we'll be waiting for details of is the delay to the fiscal statement. It's no longer going to be on Monday the 31st. November 17th is the new day, and it will be then that we will get more details. It's been upgraded to an autumn statement. That means we'll have a full forecast in the Office of Budget Responsibility and also more detail on the measures to be announced. Jeremy Hunt speaking a little earlier this morning saying that that was being done to have the most up-to-date forecasts available, and I'm sure nothing at all to do with watching what's happening on the markets and seeing how what that might perhaps be a gift in there, perhaps some leeway as we've seen borrowing costs come down. That might give the government a little bit more breathing room for where they are going to go next.
Yeah, of course, the interesting thing is this knocks it past the next Bank of England rate decision, which is due on Thursday, well, I think tomorrow, and markets pricing 75 basis points, 0.75% rise in interest rates. And that means the BOE will have to go blind into this. They can't do that having seen the government's plans. So knocking it 2.5 weeks ahead, we'll get the Bank of England rate decision, and then the government will take a breather and decide what to do with its finances, how to sort out that massive black hole in the public finances.
Yeah, interesting. We're getting some details about this as well. Bloomberg reporting that the UK is seeking to plug a £35 billion fiscal hole in that November 17th statement. The Treasury apparently drawing up 104 options to cut spending. That's according to officials. So plenty of detail for them to unpack in the meantime. And as you say, the Bank of England now in that different position, in that a week from tomorrow they will be looking at how they're going to, I suppose, manage inflation from their point of view without necessarily having the full picture from the OBR and the Treasury. Although Jeremy Hunt did point out that he had spoken to the Bank of England's Andrew Bailey yesterday before announcing this decision to delay the statement. So they are in contact, and that's a very important signal to be sending to markets as well.
Yeah, that is interesting. Gosh, 104 options. That sounds like a lot of places, but I suppose there are lots of different parts of the government spending. So is that a big number or not? Difficult to say, isn't it, really? But yeah, but Jeremy Hunt.
I certainly don't have 104 options to cut my own spending, so I'm trying to.
that is certainly true. Jeremy Hunt, of course, trying to inject a bit of stability into the government's economic credibility after the chaos of the last 7 weeks. Interesting to look at some of the other cabinet changes. Very much a cabinet, I guess you... I'm told that Starmer is now on his feet.
Speaker, and may I welcome the Prime Minister. The first British Asian Prime Minister is a significant moment in our national story. And it's a reminder that for all the challenges we face as a country, Britain is a place where people of all races and all beliefs can fulfil their dreams. That's not true in every country, and many didn't think that they would live to see the day when it would be true here. It's part of what makes us all so proud to be British. Was his Home Secretary right to resign last week for a breach of security?
Prime Minister!
Well, Mr. Speaker, can I thank the Ronald Wood gentleman for his kind and indeed generous welcome to the dispatch box. I look forward to Prime Minister's question time with him, and I know that we will have no doubt robust exchanges, but I hope that they can also be serious and grown up. So I look forward to it. Well, he asked about the Home Secretary. The Home Secretary made an error of judgment, but she recognised that. She raised the matter and she accepted her mistake. And that's why I was delighted to welcome back into a united cabinet that brings experience and stability to the heart of government. And let me tell you, Mr. Speaker, what the Home Secretary will be focused on. She'll be focused on cracking down on criminals, on defending our borders, while the party opposite remains soft on crime and in favour of unlimited immigration.
Mr. Speaker, yesterday the Prime Minister stood on the steps of Downing Street and promised integrity, professionalism and accountability. But then, with his first act, he appointed a Home Secretary who was sacked by his predecessor a week ago for deliberately pinging around sensitive Home Office documents from her personal account. Far from soft on crime, I ran the Crown Prosecution Service for 5 years. I worked with Home Secretaries to take on terrorists and serious organised crime. And I know firsthand how important it is that we have a Home Secretary whose integrity and professionalism are beyond question. So, have officials raised concerns about his decision to appoint her?
Mr. Speaker, I just addressed the issue with the Home Secretary, but he talked about fighting crime. I would hope that as we look forward, he would welcome the news today that there are over 15,000 new police officers on our street. And the Home Secretary will be supporting them to tackle burglaries. While the party opposite will be backing the lunatic protesting fringe that are stopping working people going about their lives.
Here, Starmer.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I listened carefully. That was clearly not a no. We can all see what's happened here. He's so weak, he's done a grubby deal, creating national security because he was scared to lose another leadership election. There's a new Tory at the top, but as always with them, party first, country second. Yesterday, on the steps of Downing Street, he also admitted what the whole country knows. The Tories have crashed the economy and now somebody has to pay for their mess. I say it shouldn't be working people who've been hammered time and again by this lot, but those with the broadest shoulders must step up. Does he agree?
No. Well, Mr. Speaker, the Honourable Gentleman talked about party first and country second. Perhaps he could explain to us why it was a few years ago he was supporting the member for Islington North.
Yeah.
Mr. Speaker, my record is clear. When times are difficult in this country, I will always protect the most vulnerable. That is the values of our compassionate party. We did it in COVID and we will do that again.
Mr. Speaker, he says he'll protect the most vulnerable. Let's test that. The government currently allows very rich people to live here but register abroad for tax purposes. I don't need to explain to the Prime Minister how non-dom status works. He already knows all about that. It costs the Treasury £3.2 billion every year. Why doesn't he put his money where his mouth is and get rid of it?
Well, Mr. Speaker, I have been honest. We will have to take difficult decisions to restore economic stability and confidence. And my honourable friend, the Chancellor, will set that out in an autumn statement in just a few weeks. But what I can say, as we did during COVID, we will always protect the most vulnerable. We will do this in a fair way. But what I can say, I am glad, Mr. Speaker, that the party opposite, the honourable gentleman, has finally realised that spending does need to be paid for. It is a novel concept for the party opposite. This government is going to restore economic stability and we will do it in a fair and compassionate way.
I know he's been away for a few weeks, but he should have listened to what's been going on the last 2. But anyway, I have to say, I'm surprised he's still defending non-dom status. He pretends he's on the side of working people, but in private he says something very different. Over the summer, he was secretly recorded at a garden party in Tunbridge Wells, boasting to a group of Tory members that he personally moved money away from deprived areas to wealthy places instead. Rather than apologise or pretend that he meant something else, why doesn't he now do the right thing and undo the changes that he made to those funding formulas?
Well, Mr. Speaker, I know. I know the right honourable gentleman rarely leaves North London. But if he does, he will know that there are deprived areas in our rural communities, in our coastal communities, and across the south, and this government will relentlessly support them because we are a government that will deliver for people across the United Kingdom. But Mr. Speaker, he mentioned the last few weeks. I am the first to admit that mistakes were made, and that's the reason I am standing here. But that is the difference between him and me. This summer, I was talking. I was being honest about the difficulties that we were facing. But when he ran for leader, he promised his party he would borrow billions and billions of pounds. I told the truth for the good of the country. He told his party what it wanted to hear. Leadership is not selling fairy tales. It is confronting challenges, and that is the leadership the British people will get from this government.
Mr. Speaker, I think everyone should watch the video and make their own minds up. In public, he claims he wants to level up the North, but then he boasts about trying to funnel vital investment away from deprived areas. He says one thing and does another. But they're shouting. They're not my words. They're the words of the former chair of the Tory party, sacked yesterday for telling the truth about the Prime Minister. Even his own side know he's not on the side of working people. That's why the only time he ran in a competitive election, he got trounced by the former Prime Minister, who herself got beaten by a lettuce. So why doesn't he put it to the test, let working people have their say and call a general election?
Well, it'll take a long time to get through this paper if we carry on like this, Prime Minister.
Mr. Speaker, he talks about mandates, about votes, about elections. It's a bit rich coming from the person who tried to overturn the biggest democratic vote in
our mandate is based on the manifesto that we were elected on, yeah, to remind him an election that we won and they lost. Yeah. A mandate that says we want a stronger NHS, better schools, safer streets, control of our borders and levelling up. That is the mandate that I and this government will deliver for the British people. Yeah.
Okay, we have been listening to Keir Starmer and Rishi Sunak facing off in Keir Starmer's first Prime Minister's question. Pretty robust exchanges. I think they were both in very good form today, Ewan, as we were listening to Keir Starmer and Rishi Sunak speaking there. Interesting to hear the attack lines from Keir Starmer, very much starting with, you know, comments on Suella Braverman saying that, you know, that this was a decision that, you know, did the Prime Minister stand over it, and something that we heard Rishi Sunak say that he did, you know, that it was an error of judgment, the matter had been raised, and he accepted her mistake, and he was delighted to welcome her back to a cabinet as well. Didn't answer the question, though, about whether officials had raised concerns about Suella Braverman returning as Home Secretary. And Keir Starmer's line, it's, you know, as always, the Conservatives party first and country second.
So 12 minutes of Starmer versus Sunak. I thought it was pretty punchy, wasn't it? I thought Sunak was in pretty good form. It's the first time we've seen him in this exact dispatch box pose. I thought he did a pretty decent job. I thought the script for both of them was fairly predictable. They brought up many of the things I think you could have guessed they would have brought up. Starmer saying that the Tories have crashed the economy and mentioning that a little clip of Rishi Sunak recorded in Tunbridge Wells talking about moving money across around the country. And he even raised the issue of the lettuce and Brexit, raising its ugly head as well. And the former Labour leader, Jeremy Corbyn, being mentioned as well by the Tory leader. So lots of the things you might expect to come up did come up. But it was, pretty robust stuff.
Collaborate for a greener future at the Bloomberg Green Festival, a groundbreaking celebration of the thinkers, doers, and innovators leading the way, from design and culture to technology, science, and entertainment. Hear from inspirational speakers and immerse yourself in climate solutions, July 10th through 13th in Seattle. Title sponsor, Amazon. Official airline, Alaska Airlines. Get 20% off using promo code RADIO20 at BloombergLive.com/Green Festival. Collaborate for a greener future at the Bloomberg Green Festival, a groundbreaking celebration of the thinkers, doers, and innovators leading the way, from design and culture to technology, science, and entertainment. Hear from inspirational speakers and immerse yourself in climate solutions, July 10th through 13th in Seattle. Title sponsor, Amazon. Official airline, Alaska Airlines. Get 20% off using promo code RADIO20 at BloombergLive.com/Green Festival.
Let's get the thoughts of Bloomberg opinion columnist Therese Raphael, who is listening in with us. Therese, what did you think?
Yeah, I agree. I think it was punchier than we might have expected from two leaders who are often branded as the more boring side of the spectrum. I thought it gave us a pretty good idea of where Starmer will be trying to attack and go after Sunak, and there wasn't a big surprise. And, you know, the first couple questions was on the reappointment of Suella Braverman, and was the Home Secretary right to resign last week? We heard Sunak basically say, well, you know, she made a mistake, she owned up to it, she apologized, and she'll be focused on, you know, cracking down on crime and securing the borders. And that's quite comfortable territory for Keir Starmer, you know, who ran the Crown Prosecution Service and who talks about, you know, integrity and professionalism, using Sunak's own words against him. But I thought the fact that Starmer had to switch topics so many times. So, you know, he started with Braverman, then he went to the economy and protecting the most vulnerable. He touched on non-dom status, which of course is a sight sore point, given Sunak's wife had non-dom status. And, you know, then he went back to, you know, whether Sunak's leveling up credentials are genuine, given some of the things he said this summer on the campaign trail. So basically, you know, this is Starmer poking lots of places around the Sunak armor and seeing where he can land a shot. Sunak, I thought, was prepared for all of that. He sounded a little bit like a Boris Johnson in his counterattacks. And, you know, I think we're still waiting to hear what Sunak's, you know, own kind of authentic voice is in these forums. So, you know, it was a very assured, very confident performance. But I think, you know, these two are just settling into the roles, and it will be interesting to see how it shapes up. But one thing is clear, the vibe on the Tory backbenches and front benches was a lot more positive and energetic than it's been in the previous few weeks, for the obvious reason that they now seem to have a prime minister they can get behind for, you know, at least a little while.
Trez, I thought something very interesting was really the final thing that Sunak said before he sat down was we will be delivering on our manifesto, and then trotting out some of the things which the Tories stood on in 2019, the Boris Johnson manifesto, including things like spending more money on the NHS. And I thought that was a clear repudiation of the trust agenda, wasn't it? So we're saying, Sunak was saying that we are very much going to deliver on those things that won us the election last time, and not this entirely different plan which Truss was trying to implement.
Yeah, I think that he also spoke about the 2019 manifesto, of course, in his statement in front of Downing Street. And I think part of that is about trying to establish a sort of thread of legitimacy to a premiership, you know, that he won without an election beyond his own, you know, MPs in Parliament. And so he's, you know, essentially, as he said, when he took office, that mandate was not a mandate that belongs to one person, i.e. Boris Johnson. It was a mandate for the party. So he is assuming that sort of mantle that stems from that 2019 election. I think it's that can cut both ways, because, of course, he doesn't have the headroom to make good on a lot of those promises. Many of them remain unfulfilled. You know, the number of hospitals and nurses and you know, there's a lot of, you know, a lot of creativity with those promised targets. So I think he could also end up in a bit of trouble in that manifesto. And of course, you know, while it was the Tory party that was elected, it was off the back of, you know, it was a Boris Johnson versus Jeremy Corbyn election before COVID, before Russia's invasion of Ukraine. And it feels a little bit tenuous to be harking back to it now. But he's trying to remind people that, you know, that this was a party that won big, not, you know, a few years ago.
Interesting, as Prime Minister's questions has been continuing in the background as we've been talking, Rishi Sunak declining to say if benefits will rise in line with inflation. Of course, all of this part of the calculation that will go into what is now going to be an upgraded autumn statement on the 17th of November, not the fiscal statement we're expecting on the 31st of October. That was an announcement made by Jeremy Hunt, the Chancellor, earlier on. Let's take a listen to what he had to say.
The question is how you deal with that turbulence to make sure that the very, very important and very difficult decisions that I and the Prime Minister have to make are the right ones and do the right thing for people at home who are worried about their mortgages, their jobs, the cost of living, the bills and so on.
That's Jeremy Hunt talking about the market turbulence and how they want to use the very latest government forecasts in their new autumn statement. Our senior UK economist Dan Hansen is with us in studio as well. Dan, what's the significance then of this delay and upgrade, as it's being described, to this statement?
Well, I think there are a few things here. I mean, the first thing is that this was much, much more important for Liz Truss and at the time Kwasi Kwarteng to get this medium-term fiscal plan out and sort of settle the markets and try and calm the markets down. With Sunak in and with him bringing Hunt alongside him as the Chancellor, the urgency to deliver this statement has fallen quite significantly, and you've seen that in the way markets have reacted. There's been a really positive reaction to him becoming PM and Hunt staying as Chancellor. I mean, I think the Bank of England are going to be watching this, but I think at the margin, it might make them a little bit more hawkish, I think, but that's really at the margin. And that's only because essentially they won't be able to factor in this fiscal consolidation that we know is coming down the line in their forecasts, which are going to be published on November the 3rd. But I think really what we know is that Hunt is talking to Bailey, and Bailey knows what this is going to look like, and it's been sort of well flagged what's coming down the line. So I think even though it's not going to appear in their forecasts, when they come to make that policy decision, they're going to know this is coming. So they're going to be taking it into account.
It does feel like a different approach and a different relationship with the Bank of England to the one we saw under Prime Minister Truss. Now, it's being upgraded to an autumn statement. Is there much significance to that? I'm not quite sure what a fiscal event is. I feel like that phrase was just sort of made up a few weeks ago. But is this going to be a much bigger thing than we were expecting?
I think the thing... Probably the difference. I mean, in my mind, at least, we were going to have for the announcement that was potentially going to come Monday. We were going to have an OBR forecast, and we were going to have an awful lot of policy decisions to try and fill this black hole. And to me, that feels like a budget. Now they're talking about upgrading it to an autumn statement, and I think where you can read into that is that this won't just be all about the consolidation. It'll be a lot about what we've heard there in PMQs about Sunak setting out his strategy, his economic strategy for his premiership. Because I think one thing he will want to avoid is that his premiership is defined by austerity. I think they'll need to deal with that, and they're going to deal with that. But I think they'll want a broader set of announcements that deal with potentially a lot of these things that are still sitting in the 2019 manifesto that haven't yet been dealt with.
Okay, Dan Hansen, thanks very much for that analysis. A final thought to you, Therese Raphael, from this first PMQs. Has it set us up for a dry run of the next general election, do you think?
I think the Tories will be very reluctant to have another change of leadership before they go to voters. The party is facing really dreadful polling right now, and so the interest in self-preservation probably trumps, any divisions over policy that will undoubtedly emerge as Sunak makes these difficult choices on tax and spending. So I think on balance, this does, set us up for what will be, a weekly clash, until voters get their say. But, very hard to make predictions these days in British politics. And I've been proven wrong many times before. So I'll leave it there. But interesting start to a new prime minister and Britain's first Asian prime minister, as Keir Starmer said. And I think that was showed that the opposition leader is seeing this as, as a significant moment in the life of the nation. But it's not going to deter him from taking on the person in the party opposite and trying to convert those polls into an election victory.
Bloomberg UK Politics. Listen weekdays at noon on DAB Digital Radio in London.
Collaborate for a greener future at the Bloomberg Green Festival, a groundbreaking celebration of the thinkers, doers, and innovators leading the way, from design and culture to technology, science, and entertainment. Hear from inspirational speakers and immerse yourself in climate solutions, July 10th through 13th in Seattle. Title sponsor, Amazon. Official airline, Alaska Airlines. Get 20% off using promo code RADIO20 at BloombergLive.com/greenfestival.